it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's got to 2-2 and we've still got more than half an hour to go. And here's Ozil. Lacazette. Ozil!
Yo!
Could it went left, but it went right. Could have went wrong, but it went right. Said it was Ian, but it went right.
One, now we got
bars on bars on site.
Classic free kick.
We're
heading for a classic
in the
paper.
Final. I thought it was Ian Wright, but I weren't seeing right. Man could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with the good energy. Man,
gonna
work with the bad man vibe. None of these guys.
Hello. It's our podcast. My name's Lewis, and I'm joined by my boy Khalil. Khalil, how you doing, man? This is our debut together. We haven't even had a conversation before, but we're stuck on a podcast with each other for the next 45 minutes or so. It's a surreal experience.
Yeah. Two-man debut. You just got to pretend like we've done this all the time, innit?
I'm sure it'll be fine, man. We've got that, you know, common ground with, you know, supporting Arsenal and wanting Arsenal to do well. So, yeah, we've got that to fall back on at least. How's everything going? You know, like, how's the last week been? You know, I guess life is easy when you're winning football games.
Absolutely, man. You're just chilling and hate watching. That's what your time is consumed by. Just hate watching, see what comes off. So, yeah, United fed me really nicely Monday evening. I actually forgot that the game was on until I saw people tweeting about Olise, and I thought, let me just tune in. And yeah, all good. And then obviously taking the Champions League games.
It's been a mixed week of successful and unsuccessful hate watches. I don't know how many unsuccessful hate watches I've got in the chamber for City, man. I don't know if I've got another one in me. This Spurs game, I'm not sure I can watch it because it's going to make me angry.
Yeah, Marco Silva has a plan for me, and if he doesn't have a plan for me, then David Moyes has a plan for me, and if he doesn't have a plan for me, then 115 charges got a plan for me. That's it. I got no hope in that Spurs game.
Yeah, the other hate watchers have been going well. Like you said, the Man United one was fantastic. Although I had, you know, as people know, I do have a Vinicius agenda, and I'm on the Vinicius hate watch. So that didn't go that well for me this evening. You know, that was sickening to watch. Honestly, Hasselu, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the heritage is too much.
How do they do it every year? It's outrageous. Like, and the thing is, it's like, cool, but I thought Madrid were the better side on the night, and you know, on the weight of things, probably deserved to get the victory on on the day. But it's like, at the time Madrid scored the goals, but you're looking at Bayern and you're like, you know what, they're actually seeing this out. They're quite comfortable. And then boom, out of the blue, Neuer mistake. When do you ever see Neuer make mistakes? And then, like, what, like 2 minutes later, bro? Like, it's just, I don't know, man. You know, I think as Arsenal fans, we're obviously looking at our team in a different manner. You know, we're looking at the tactical side of things, you know, all these tactical things that Arteta's doing with the team, little tweaks here and there, how we're pressing and, you know, all these things, right? Relationships on the pitch. You look at Madrid and they're just sort of like, they just seem to be like quality players just thrown on the pitch together, and they seem to do the job. And it's I find that quite frustrating, actually.
It's like, if I said to you a year ago that Hosslu's going to come on and decide a Champions League semi-final, you'd be looking at me like a madman. But here he is tucking in a crucial goal.
Well, they were saying on BT, what was it? They had two Stoke City rejects coming onto the Champions League semi-final, triple moting and Hosslu.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. But let's move on to our team, obviously. We did our Patreon post-match on the weekend, which yourself and Cougs did. Good listen. If you haven't listened already, that's where you get the breakdowns, right, guys? Yeah, don't expect us to be doing some thorough breakdown of the game 4 days later, right? It's come and gone. It's on Patreon. Pay your £3 and you get access to it, right?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm not mentioning a single thing I said on that Patreon right now.
Exactly. but yeah, I mean, the game itself, I think you made a good point on the Patreon. You was like, you said, you know, you look at the fixture calendar. I can't remember if it was you or Cougs anyway, but you said you have a look at the fixture calendar with like 5 or 6 weeks to go. And you look at Bournemouth and you sort of say, right, 3 points. But then as soon as that game comes around, now all these stats are coming out of the woodwork. Bournemouth haven't lost X, you know, they're the most informed team outside of all these. And then all of a sudden, it looks like banana skin territory. And did you like have any of that feeling coming into the game, or was you pretty confident we're getting the job done?
No. I was definitely nervous. Not nervous to the point of thinking that we were going to drop points, but definitely nervous as I thought that the game would be difficult. Yeah, like you said, pre-game or a while back, you think it's a bank of 3 points, but yeah, as you get closer, suddenly you start remembering videos of Justin Kluivert at Ajax when he was the next big thing, and you're thinking, is this the weekend where suddenly he turns into a Ballon d'Or contender? But yeah, and obviously, you know, we all know about Solanke. Like I said, we all know about, what's his name? Was it Alex Scott, that midfielder they got? And then through like FPL, you've got like a few players in there anyway that they're regular points getters. So you're already thinking, yeah, this might be the weekend that you really put something together and mess things up. But
we've seen what's their right winger called again? Semenyo, is it?
Semenyo, I think. Yeah.
Semenyo, yeah. He looked pretty difficult to handle as well. But you know, I thought overall on the day our performance was pretty good for, you know, I think we were well worth, you know, the lead that we did build. And things got a little bit hairy towards the end, I guess. But overall, I thought we played really, really well, actually. And we scored some really nice goals.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's just obviously some of the post-match discussion was obviously centred around the fact that it took the penalty for us to officially break through. But if you actually watch the game, you know that, you know, the first 25 minutes, it was total, utter domination. Should have scored 4-5, no exaggeration. It's just, it didn't fall like that. But based on that performance, you would expect... We were just expecting the breakthrough to happen. It just so happened that it took, you know, that penalty for it to, you know, for us to go 1-0 up. But I couldn't have really any complaints about the performance. Just the finishing, really. Just got to take your chances so you're not having that nervous second half period where the game is slightly in the balance. I can't really have any complaints about that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, after we had missed all those opportunities in the first half and then we finally do get the penalty and you're like, fuck, I really hope it's not one of those, like, one of those days, you know, where we missed a penalty and it's just West Ham. What was it last year where we missed a penalty? It wasn't West Ham, was it? It was...
West Ham away.
It was West Ham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was West Ham, sorry. You're just really hoping it's not, you know, one of those days again. But there is something about this team where I do feel like we've kind of stepped over that little mental block hurdle that maybe was there last year. I don't really see us stumbling. We'll talk about the United game coming, which obviously is all you need to do is look at our record at Old Trafford and see, you know, why we wouldn't be the most confident going there. And you obviously being a bit of a Mancunian, you would, you know, all about the hurt of going to Manchester and, you know, coming away with disappointing results. But I look at this, the makeup of this team, and I do feel like they're firing on all cylinders, and I do feel like they're ready to match City stride for stride, and I do envisage us winning every single game left. Well, obviously only two games left, but I do envisage us winning both games now. I don't see us slipping up.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a mixture of a few things as to why we see more sort of mentally and physically there in comparison to last season. I think one, there's obviously been a concerted effort by our coach to set the team up in a much more robust way. You know, we don't see as much of the sort of basketball matches that it felt like it was more end-to-end last season. I mean, it was more end-to-end last season. We ended up conceding like, was it 40 goals around about, which, you know, through the first half of the season, it didn't really seem like we had a bad defence, but it really got a bit watery in the second half of the season. Yeah. But yeah, so I think one, we're definitely set up more compact, more rigid. Again, two, the transfer window, again, Rice and Havertz, the athleticism that they provide, the ability to cover ground in addition to the players we already have, again, makes us more solid. And yeah, three, the experience of having gone through what happened last season, I think it's the players have that in their minds, and I think they've gone about it in a much more emotionally controlled way. We did have a wobble, obviously, between the Aston Villa game and the Bayern game, but as you can see, it hasn't at this point totally derailed the season in a way that kind of we lost a bunch of games in the cluster last season. So my thing was I just wanted the team to take it through to the final day and still be competitive, and it seems like this is what they're on track to do, so I can't really complain too much. People may point to the Villa game, but at the end of the day, we won, was it 16-1-1? That's just insane form. Like if we don't win the title, it's not going to be because of anything that happened in the second half of the season, in my opinion. It's going to be the first half of the season where we had our documented... We're still a good team, but we had our documented issues in regards to, one, chance creation, and then two, once we started creating chances really well, our ability to put them in the back of the net. So, I think there's a mixture of a few things as to why we're better than last season.
Yeah, no, and it's sickening, really. You look at the form guide of, you know, the last 20 games or so, or whatever it is, and you just see a W, 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 draw against City, loss against Villa, W, 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 W. And you're like, surely that's enough, you know, but it's not.
Yeah.
This is the animal we're talking about. And they were talking on the main pod about, you know, how much points difference is Pep actually worth to a team? Like, and they made a good point that it's not like, I don't think you could really put a number on it. It's kind of like if you get 90 points, Pep will get his 91.
He'll
get his 92. You know, even if you get 79, you'll be like, yeah, you know what, I'll get my 83. And it's very hard to quantify how much points value he actually gives you, but he manages to churn something out of this City team down the back end of the season where they just go on these phenomenal, you know, streaks of form where they're, to any challenger that they have, they're basically saying to you, you have to beat us. You can't come to our ground and draw. That's not
good enough.
You have to win. And, you know, I still remain hopeful. But it does seem like if you are going to look back at, you know, games and where the tide could have turned, I think, you know, Gary Neville was probably right at the time where, you know, if you want to steal this title away from City, you've got to win at the Etihad. And I think both us and Liverpool missed big opportunities to beat Man City this season, maybe. Maybe that's being a bit harsh on us at the Etihad, because who actually beats City at the Etihad? You know, it is crazy. But, I mean, when we've won titles previously, you know, when we beat Man United at Old Trafford to win the league, you know, we beat Man United at Old Trafford to win the title. You know what I mean? Obviously, it's not the same thing because Man City, I think they're just such a strong team, but and they were stronger than those Man United teams, I believe. But it's still that kind of thing that you have to do to get over the line. And we did it in 97, 98 as well. In order to, I think Man United were like 10 points clear of us. We had to beat Man United at Old Trafford you know, to get over the mark. And I do feel like if you want to take this title away from City, you have to do something spectacular. And it's very difficult. You know, this is the game we're playing, and this is what Pep has made it, this kind of like impossible challenge that you have. And it's, you know, it's hard to see, you know, it's hard to see what you can do to really close that gap, or not even close the gap, just get over the line. Because you don't even know what City have got planned for next season. Do you know what I mean? They could go in strength for strength as well. But was there, just going back to the Bournemouth game, were there any events in the game that you wanted to talk about in particular? Like we mentioned the penalty, and you know, we scored some nice goals as well. Havertz on great form. I'm sure there's, you know, be quite a few questions, but there were quite a few questions last week about Havertz. What's your thoughts on Havertz at the moment, and the links to, you know, strikers this week in the media? Has your view on Havertz changed much as a player from when we signed him?
Yeah, it's changed. I was never ever an advocate for him as a midfielder in any way, shape or form. It didn't matter what the tacticals were saying on Twitter. I could not envision him being effective in the midfield role. Now, when he did play there, he's very adept at carrying out tactical instruction. But for me, my biggest issue with him is his quality on the ball from a midfielder position. I don't think it is a high enough technical quality as a passer or as a carrier of the ball to be effective in that Xhaka role from last season. So when he started playing up front, I was very much, my attitude was kind of, yeah, let's see how it goes, because that's the position where I think he can be most effective. And he has proven that pretty much since I think it was the FA Cup game at home, the one we lost to Liverpool. You could tell that it suited him better. I mean, it suits his game. He's quite intelligent at making runs, you know, obviously good off the ball. He's obviously a confidence player as well. So you can see once the goal started flowing, he kind of is a bit more forceful. I don't know if that's the right phrase I'm looking for, but yeah, he's more willing to strike the ball when he gets, you know, such opportunities. What I'm worried about, which is obviously something that I put in the group, is I was fearful that his good form up front would be something that affects our transfer plans going forward, because I am 100% sure if we do not buy a top class 9 and or a top class Y4 that can bang in 20 goals a season, I'm pretty confident we'll be back where we are next season, where we're a good team that's challenging, but we still lack that little X factor to really put us over the edge. One of the things that we heard a lot from, I mean, I agreed with it as well. When we looked at Liverpool, for example, this season, there was the notion that their football's unsustainable, which I completely understood. But at various points, they have forwards or midfielders that can crash the ball in at the back of the net. Like, McAllister can pick up the ball from 25 yards, smash it in. We know Salah can do what Salah does. Darwin Nunez is hot and cold, but when he's hot, you know, he can put it in the back of the net. We still lack, especially because Martinelli fell off hard this season, we definitely lack difference makers in the final third. That if Saka isn't on song, then you're kind of a bit stuck from a goal-scoring aspect. Trossard has been an invaluable contributor, but again, if you're relying on Trossard to be a difference maker, I think we'll kind of be back where we're sort of ended up again, which is we're a good team. We obviously score a lot of goals, but in order to win the big trophies, you do need that X factor. I think another example of that is how we're going to score more goals, I think, pretty much than any other Premier League season if we carry on at this rate. However, we have not scored, I believe, in 5 different Premier League games. And I think overall, we haven't scored in 8 games across all competitions, which goes to show that, yeah, we've got the volume, but still at those very particular moments, such as Champions League quarterfinal away from home, we lacked that extra dimension to take us over the edge. We were looking at Bayern's front six at one point and thinking all of them just look so dangerous. Like Sané looked dangerous, Gnabry looked dangerous. And these are guys that obviously they're good and they've got reputations, but they're no longer considered like the absolute best in their position. But still, you could feel the kind of trepidation whenever they were through a goal. So they had Kane, they had Coleman, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, long story short, Havertz has been an effective piece up front, especially with Jesus and Martelli not being as effective. I hope it does not dissuade the club from going big on someone on someone like an Isak, for example, because of Havertz playing well. Havertz would be most effective if he is the utility player. That may be a bit expensive for a utility player, but a guy that you can pop in here, there, everywhere to provide a different dimension as opposed to him being the go-to guy up front.
Yeah, I echo your thoughts because I think when you look at, although we're like the highest goal scorers this season, we've still got, I think we've got 5 games this season where we failed to score a goal in the league.
Yeah, and obviously
then you've got the Bayern game as well where we also failed to score in the away leg and we lose out by 1 goal. So there clearly is, although we are a free scoring team, you know, maybe when we've got the first goal and the second goal, there are still some games where maybe we do not have the we just don't, like you said, we just don't have that quality in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net that a Man City do. And Man City can have off days, like we saw against Nottingham Forest. They can have off days, but it's all right. They've got Haaland up front who can, you know, he's going to score 50-55% of his big chances. And some days he only needs one. And he's just going to put it in the back of the net and save their blushes. And we don't really have that, do we? We still have that. Although we've moved away last year of, you know, having to play well to win, we've moved away from that now. I don't think we actually have to play well to win. But I do feel like we still need quite a lot of chances to score because we don't have that clinical nature about us. There are very few games where we can have one or two chances and score 3-4 goals. You know, I don't think we're not built that way yet. And I think the only way we get to that level is, like you said, is if we do bring in a proper gunman. And like you said, I also have the same fears. If Havertz continues, like, say, for example, Havertz scores against United, he scores in the last day against Everton. And who knows, maybe fires us to a title. Who knows? Who would have been saying that in bloody September, October, by the way? Not me. But, you know, if that does happen, or even if he does score and ends the season with, what's he got now, like 10, 11? Is it 11?
I think in all comps, it's like 12, 13.
Yeah, so I mean, if he ends up with 13, 14 goals, there is kind of that, because people will isolate it, right? They will say, right, this is the record up front and this is the record in midfield. And up front, it's going to look pretty crazy, right? It's going to be like 16 games, 12 goals or something like that, fair play. I mean, that's pretty good. You know, that is really good. I'm just with you, man. I just feel like we need more of, like, and Isak signing to me would be like, I would back us so much to win the league next season if we had like an Isak level signing, you know. And that's all. Like, even if we just sign Isak, I'd be like, you know what? Cool. That's the X factor we need. And even if we have to carry a 32-year-old Partey or, you know, Jorginho or however old these two are, who knows? Even if we do have to carry them, I feel like a signing of that ilk kind of just gets us over the line regardless.
Absolutely. Because, if you're able to put the ball in the back of the net spontaneously, just as a moment of genius or whatever it is you want to call it, it takes so much pressure off the rest of the team. Because, yeah, we're well coached. We're top of every XG table, for and against, etc., etc. We've got all the components of a good team. But I think I can't remember if I've said on the pod before, but I've said it's much more difficult to go from, it's easier to go from a crap team to a good team than it is to go from a good team to a team that wins. That last bit is always a difficult hurdle. And we're there. We could crack, you know, we could cross that threshold this season. But again, we're relying on City to drop off a little. But yeah, just that extra bit to cross the finish line is always the most difficult part. So regardless of what happens this season, I really hope that, you know, the coach and the recruits at the club can look at the squad from like a cold lens or whatever the phrase is, and just see that even if we are to win the title, there's still those places that we can improve, especially in the final third. Because like these, especially the second leg of the, I mean, both legs of the Champions League quarterfinal, but especially the second leg, we just lacked threat. It just seemed like we almost run out of ideas in the final third, and it was only a breakthrough was only going to come if we'd caused like a turnover from pressing or a set piece, which fine. But I feel as if you're relying on that, then you are lacking something. So yeah, X Factor, Stardust, whatever it is you want to call it, the other top clubs have it. I think we need to go get it.
Yeah, no, facts, man, facts. Let's get on to some listeners' questions, and we can talk a little bit about we've got some about the United game upcoming. Wesley_Wesley BD, big up you, Wesley. He asks, no matter how crap United are, do you think the occasion may get to the team? This is the PTSD we've been carrying around as Arsenal fans, right? This is, you know, our issues of playing Man United. We have got a victory at OT under Arteta, don't we? That was the Emil Smith Rowe goal where De Gea was
That was the Aubameyang penalty lockdown.
Was it the Aubameyang penalty? What was the Emil Smith Rowe one? Did we not win that game?
Smith Rowe scored against United. I don't remember.
Oh, you wouldn't, would you?
Nah, not even from agenda. I'm just trying to remember the one. If it's Old Trafford, then it's definitely the Aubameyang penalty. That's the only win we've had since since 06. We won there in the cup with when Welbeck scored the goal, but in terms of the league, it was just the Aubameyang penalty during lockdown. So yeah, it has been as bad as described. Remember last season? Last season was the Lokonga game where he came in,
yeah,
and then they scored from two penalties. Yeah.
Well, there won't be any Rashford this time, will there?
We hope not. It could be that they all return
against us.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the question was, PTSD. So I would say no, but I just reminded myself of the game from last season where we went in confident. We thought we were going to win. We won 6 out of 6, I think, at that point. United obviously had their crappy start to the season. And yeah, we lost. And it's convenient to blame it on Lokonga, but I still feel as if, you know, there were players in there that maybe were a bit too sloppy or sloppier than they should have been. I would like to think that there isn't any PTSD with this set of players. This set of players have done a lot of good and they've gone through a lot of, they jumped over a lot of hurdles. If you think about, I mean, this season, we lost 15 in a row to City, whoever it was, and then we finally got that win. If you think about our little record against Liverpool, it was not great, but in recent years we've turned that around. You know, we beat Spurs home and away. I don't see why not is the question to ask. I think a lot of it is justified in terms of the fan perspective. I was there when Van Persie scored in his first game back, his first game against us. I was there when United won the title back in 09 against us. So I've been moulded by the pain. I've stood there in the North End, surrounded by bare United fans, drunk out of their mind, and I had to pretend to sit there and like that. So, I can speak firsthand to the trauma that is associated with Old Trafford. But yeah, I am confident that this team is better.
Yeah, I feel for you. I've only had to watch those kind of things from the comfort of my own home, but we have got unhappy memories at Old Trafford, but they are like really fucking shit. It's difficult to actually quantify just how bad they are.
Yeah, so... Casemiro is fluent in Uncleese, man. That guy, it's... he's Saudi bound is not enough of a description, but
yeah, he needs to go play in like fucking
Indian Australia Premier League at this rate.
Yeah. Indian IPL, yeah.
Him and Robert Pires on a five-a-side.
Yeah, he needs to go and play for Hyderabad or something like that.
Yeah,
he's looking crazy. And you know, you look at that Man United team. I think they'll be without Maguire as well. They're playing Casemiro at centre back. You know, Antony and is Garnacho even? I don't even know if is Garnacho available. I'm not even sure. I don't even know. Their team is so shit. Bruno didn't play the other day, did he? You know, they're decimated by injuries. Their coach doesn't have a clue. He's still deluded. He still thinks they play like the best football in the league, and they're like, you know, their position is not a fair reflection of where they should be. Which I absolutely agree with. By the way, I think they should be
worse off. Down the league. Yeah,
down the league. They're playing like a relegation team right now, but it's hard to look at. You know, I think with these kind of games, they say these derby kind of games, United have to win, right? Like they can't. They just got thumped 4-0 to Palace. They can't go out of a whimper, you know. And if they do as well, you know, but then again, they don't. I mean. There's that kind of thing. They don't really want Man City to win the league, do they? So, I don't know. Is there a bit of that going on? I don't know.
I was saying in the group as well, on the lowest of keys, I wanted them to draw at Palace because now they're obligated to have a response. You know what I mean? Like, if they just do like a small 1-1 to Palace, whatever, drab draw, then there's not this narrative around the Arsenal game that they need to respond. Let me be clear, we should win under any context because they're crap. But again, it's that extra thing of because they've been embarrassed and they're going to feel the need to put, you know, get stuck in, whatever you want to describe it as. And generally speaking, yeah, I mean, it's the mindset of a professional footballer is obviously different to us. I don't think they're going to go out there and throw anything. And quite frankly, they're not good enough to be actively deciding.
Yeah, they could do it if they wanted to. Yeah. I'm trying to have the same thoughts about Spurs as well, but everyone keeps saying, you know.
Nah, Spurs are shameless. They will absolutely lie down even though they're crap. They will absolutely do that, no problem. Absolutely no problem. United is a bit different. They're actually a big club. Spurs are just, they just exist in North London, that's it. They will, if it's 93rd minute and they're drawing, expect some shenanigans. Expect a back pass from Richarlison back to Vicario and the ball ended up in the back of the net. I'm fully expecting that.
I can see that as well. Let's move on. Right, what else we got here? Bloody hell, Skadzi. DJ Skadzi, he's gone right for the jugular here. He says, if we don't win the title this season, how many more seasons do we give Arteta to win it until we start looking for a new manager? Fuck, you know. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's a bit morbid. I don't really know how to answer that because I think it has to be like a holistic thing as well, right? So we have to look at it in terms of, right, We got, you know, we did okay in the Champions League this season. We kind of like reached my objectives. I would have said my objective at the start of the competition would be to get to the quarterfinals. So we went out with a bit of a whimper against Bayern Munich. For me, it'd be like, right, next season, we've got to improve on that. You know, whether that be getting to the semi-finals or whatnot, I just want a better showing in the Champions League, right? And also there's this kind of like European... hoodoo thing that Arteta's kind of got overcome as well, you know, going away in Europe and stuff like that. And then you've got the league, which when you're going up against this Man City team and Pep, like we just discussed, you know, a few minutes ago, Klopp won one title in how many years? Like a decade?
7 years, was it? 8 years?
Eight years? One title in 8 years. And he's still going to go down in like the Hall of Fame of GOAT managers, you know? So, yes, I think you need to like, as a club, we need to sort of be looking always looking for ways to improve. But you know, I don't feel like we should be having those conversations just yet on, you know, when do we start moving past Arteta? You know, I'm not sure about that, because a lot of that is dependent on what Pep does with Man City as well. Because as long as he is around, I mean, you're always going to be the underdogs to win the league. So if you're always the underdogs, I mean, how realistic is your chances to actually win the thing? So I don't know. What do you think? I think that's pretty harsh, but
yeah. So this one, it's a nuanced conversation in regards to, if we don't win, let's say this year and next year, what then happens? Because I was an Arteta skeptic for quite a while. Because I felt as if that, I mean, yeah, obviously we sunk down the table and we were a crap team for a long while, and it kind of felt as if as much as Arteta saved us from the doldrums, we also gave Arteta an opportunity. Like, there's not many situations in which a big club is going to give a rookie manager all the time and all the backing required to mold a team in his image. So this team is very much a reflection of him, from, you know, the goalkeeper all the way through to up front and every single squad member. We're back challenging at the top table. With Pep around, like you've mentioned, it's very difficult to kind of ascertain what is a failure, what's not. If this season, for example, we had finished behind Liverpool, I would have been disgusted. Because the whole kind of Premier League season has been framed around, you know, City is an understandable team to lose to. Anyone else, I would have had a tough time coming, you know, behind. So the fact that it's just us and City, it's a little bit understandable. Next season, I would like to see a greater points total, because if you remember, part of the reason we're finishing on 89 points is that we couldn't beat Fulham home and away. And then we lost to West Ham at home. So those are points that we left on the table that have nothing to do with Pep Guardiola's existence. So you want to see an improvement on that. And again, like you mentioned, in Champions League, being better, I think there's still that about, I don't think we've won a home leg of a European tie like in a very long time under Arteta. Because I think even when we reached the semi-final in COVID times, I don't think we won any of the home leg. So yeah, there's still slight issues around Europe and our performance. So yeah, year in, year out, improvement is the bare minimum. I think the only other kind of context that you can maybe see Arteta moving on is if the players no longer respond to him. And it doesn't seem like that is a thing. All the players obviously speak very highly of him. They want to come and play for him. And I think that may be the bigger indicator of his staying power at the club. The other factor is potentially him being attracted to other jobs. But again, I made reference to the fact that Arsenal gave him the opportunity as much as he took the opportunity. There's not going to be many big clubs around Europe that are going to give you the time to stink and then the money to then back you to do what you want. Like, Barcelona are never doing that in a million years. They're broke and they don't have the temperament to. You know, Madrid have got, you know, Alonso tapped. Maybe Bayern Munich, but does he want to go to Germany? You know, so I think he'll be here for a while, so long and short of it, but I don't think it's just a job for him in perpetuity, especially because at this point, we still haven't crossed that final hurdle, as difficult as it is, but it's the reality. You know, if you want to win, you got to beat. You know, if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. That's what they say, right? So, yeah, not a straightforward answer, but no, I'm not sacking at the end of the season. If that's what
no. Kyle was at. No. DJ Scads, I hope that answers your question. Okay, right, where are we? A similar question that kind of like just follows up from that. AS Soho 11, he asks, how do we evolve from an 89 point team into a 93 point team? These are the standards.
Final third demons, I'm telling you, it is the way to go from a good team to a great team. I think I was just watching on the timeline just a random comp of Hazard the other day.
And it's just like that kind of talent just wins you games. It wins you titles. It, of course, I'm not saying there's a Hazard out there, but it's the notion of having a guy in the final third you can throw the ball to and they can win the game for you. Now, Saka is our go-to guy. But again, I've always been of the opinion that he should be a great player amongst other great players, where, you know, another great player on the other side or up front, it provides more space for them to work on. So there's more angles, there's more ways to win a game. So yeah, final third demons. And now that we've shown that we can spend big on the best players, you can go spend 100 million on Declan Rice, you know, you can potentially spend 100 mil again on a single player. It means that those final third difference makers are in our reach financially. So I think that should be the absolute priority. I remember after the Bayern game, I think there was the quotes from Arteta about we lacked... Listen, that might be fake news, but a few of them, I remember quotes where he was saying that we lacked like a 30-goal player or something along those lines. So it seems as if that has been acknowledged, that that is maybe the last thing that's lacking. But yeah, that's what takes you from an 89-point team to a 97, 98-point team. We just referenced Klopp. Klopp had an elite front three. Two of them were banging in 30 and the other one was facilitating that. We don't really have that at Arsenal as good as we are. If we can grab an elite wide forward and a number nine, that is what takes us to the next level. We're just watching Madrid. It's like Vinicius can pick up the ball, dribble, put one in the top corner. Like, you know, I referred to Bayern before with, you know, Kane and Musiala and so on and so forth. That is what takes you to the next level, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, we did mention about the fact that we've had five goalless games this season, another one, including the Bayern game. At the end of the day, those are the games, those goalless performances, they're the difference between us winning the title and not, right? You turn one of those games into where you do grab a goal, you know, you're in the box seat to win the title. So yeah, it's all well and good, like being able to, like, you know, spread the goals, you know, Gabriel gets six, you know, everyone chip in. It's all, it sounds good in theory. It's all well and good, but at the end of the day, you still want that reliable guy that is going to be able to, you know, in two-thirds of the games, you know, he's going to score. You know? And you just can't beat that. You know, we don't quite have that. We've got kind of like one in two guys, you know?
Yeah.
Which is still good. Or, you know, we've got... Yeah, I won't get into Gabby Jesus because we've done it to death. But
Saudi is calling. That's all I'm saying. Saudi is calling.
I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready to let go. We have got a question about Martinelli from Yonko Abs. He says, "Is next season's Martinelli's last chance under Arteta? He might be slipping to that category of shock sell, but can he be improved on?" See, I haven't had Martinelli personally down as like a shock sell. I think he's had a shocking season, no doubt about it. He's been pretty poor. He showed like glimmers that maybe, you know, I think he had like a really good game against Liverpool, and he's had other good games as well. He obviously scored the winner against Man City at the Emirates when he came on. So he's had like good moments. I think he had like a really good game in the Champions League. He's had like some good games in the Champions League as well. But he just hasn't kicked on down the back stretch of this of 2024 and this season where we really needed him to. And obviously Trossard has kind of filled that void, but you know, Trossard is the end product guy, isn't he? He's not gonna, like what you mentioned about today with Vinicius, he's not gonna skin a man and, you know, rifle one in. You know, he's not doing that. He's a very good finisher and he's got a fantastic final ball as well, but he's just not that guy. And I guess we all had hopes that Martinelli would be that guy, especially after last season where What did he finish last season? Like 15, 16 goals, was it? Maybe a little bit more. And I guess we all hoped this season that he would, you know, carry on with that, get another 15, 16 goals and, you know, solidify himself as like a real shooter in the Prem. But it hasn't happened. Where are you standing with Martinelli right now? Because when I'm talking about Jesus, I'll excuse him because maybe his injuries and stuff like that. When we talk about Martinelli, there is no real excuse, right? He's been given runs of games to put it together. He's playing in his preferred position. You know, there aren't really excuses there for him, are there?
Yeah, so there was the mitigating circumstance of that left midfield position where Xhaka played last season. And I think there is some validity to that. There's some validity to that partly because Martelli is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the public pod, but he's not the top tier talent. He's a level below, which means that you need to facilitate them and put them in the best position for them to succeed. He's not one to, make the best of a bad situation. Like, the reason why Saka's always been a better player is Saka, no matter what context or position he takes up, he can be effective. He can be a creator. He's turned himself to a scorer. He can come short. He can go out wide. Like, he can vary his play to be an effective forward in a way that Martelli cannot. So I do believe there is some validity to losing Xhaka and having Havertz there. These are two guys that I don't think their strengths are necessarily when it comes to sort of link-up play with their ball at the feet sort of thing. Like, Havertz can do it back to goal, but in terms of progressing play, I think it's a different context, which he's not the best at. So you had those two on the left side, and they didn't really mesh well. But aside from that, yeah, he's not been good. In regards to him being a shock sale, I don't think so, purely because we don't have loads of numbers up front. So I don't think it's at that stage. I think we'll see sales of other popular people who I will not mention for fear of getting in trouble. But yeah, I don't see him as a shock sale. In terms of it being his last chance, it's a strong phrase, last chance. I think because the team has obviously advanced from sort of challenging for top four to being a title challenger in quite a quick period of time. Usually, if we were to kind of advance at a more sort of slow rate, it'd provide opportunities for sort of player development, if that makes sense. Like, if you take, for example, Fabio Vieira, I don't think anyone expected us to be in a title challenger last season, so maybe you can sort of bed Fabio Vieira into a team that is slowly progressing. But now we're trying to challenge for titles, so there's not really that time to sort of develop young players, if that makes sense. So with Martinelli, some people spoke about him being a striker. And in another context, where maybe we're still a developing team that's not necessarily a title challenging team, maybe you can figure out a position change that can get the best out of him, because obviously he's a good finisher. Well, not this season, but I think he has the potential to be a good finisher. He's got good instincts. So him being a touchline winger isn't necessarily something that he will excel at unless he's, you know, given the right context to succeed in. So it's a difficult one. I think next season he'll be better. I think we'll make certain midfield signings that can provide him a platform to excel in, like he did with Xhaka. Whether that will be enough for him to be like a solidified left wing starter, or first choice starter in the way Saka is, I don't know. Again, if there's a way to upgrade on left wing, I'd absolutely take it right now, even with the potential that Martinelli has. But yeah, it's just been a disappointing season. It's a mixture of things, but yeah, he needs to take a little bit of responsibility for that. I don't think he can just put it solely at the feet of him not having a decent central midfield partner to work with.
Yeah, it's true, because We've spoken a lot about Martinelli being up front and playing up front for quite a while now, you know. Because everything about him does kind of scream centre forward, but he's just never really, and obviously he burst on the scene as a striker, right? Like, that's where, you know, we where he was playing those like Europa games or whatever they were, League Cup games. Yeah. He was playing as a striker,
but is Arteta really going to take that risk? Is he going to take that risk now to spend time? That's the thing. So that's what I was referring to in terms of like if we were developing at a slower rate as a team. But now that we're here and trying to challenge, I don't think Arteta is necessarily going to take the risk that comes with developing, you know, Martin into a striker, because obviously it takes time, it takes mistakes, it takes a while for that kind of thing to hit off. So yeah, it's a difficult one.
It is, and it is something I'd like to see, but like you said, I don't think we've got like the time or the patience to be able to sit through that experiment right now. I think we kind of need ready made, and we shouldn't really settle for anything less, to be honest. And yeah, I think we do have to start looking at that position for an upgrade, because like you said, these are fine margins, man. If you want to be the best, you have to make tough calls and tough decisions like this. And I don't think any area of the pitch should be
off limits.
Off limits, yeah, exactly. No area of the pitch should be off limits for improvement. If there's a better player than, you know, or someone better suited, then you should be looking at them, you know, to take your team to the next level. And I think Arteta is the kind of psychopath that would actually do that anyway. So I don't really have any fears about that. Last question. This is from I Am Mr. Lex. He says, we can't keep spending 200 million every summer, but how do we get the squad to an elite level and get over the line for a league title with our resources? Respect Arteta, but there will come a point where winning is all that matters. Actually, I guess we've kind of answered that, right? We've answered kind of like what we need to do to get to the next level. Let me move on to Don Mikel 17. He asked, thoughts on De Jong joining with Arteta, said to be a big fan, and would you spend £100 million on Isak?
Yes, I would spend £100 million on Isak. That's the short answer for that one. Frankie De Jong, there seems to be quite a split opinion, because I'm a fan of the player, and I think he would be a really good addition to this team. There seems to be a lot of chatter about his wages. I think that he is fully aware of the fact if he leaves Barcelona, he's not living that nicely ever again, because no one is giving him half £1 million a week aside from Barcelona, which is why he has stayed there despite the numerous attempts to literally throw him out of the club. So if he was to come available, and taking into consideration that Barcelona broke, I think that we could get him at a decent price. If I said to you, Frankie De Jong for 60 million or Bruno G for 100 million, what would you say?
Bruno G for me.
Really? Okay.
I don't know enough about Frankie De Jong, if I'm being honest.
I think he would be a good partner for Rice, especially when it comes to progressing the ball from deep. He's a good carrier of the ball. He can assist. I wouldn't play him as a six, but he can assist in terms of that build-up play. And that's kind of what we need from whoever's going to be that 6-8 hybrid that is earmarked. I wouldn't make him like a absolute priority in this transfer window. Again, my priority is all around four players. But actually, just to answer a little bit about the previous question about we don't necessarily have 200 mil to spend, we generally don't know. I think a lot of that is linked to PTSD because of, you know, the latter Wenger days, or not even latter Wenger days, the mid-Wenger days when we moved to the Emirates, where we've got 1p and we can only spend it like over 50 transfer windows. You know, since the Kroenkes have taken over full time from bought out Usmanov, they seem more willing to invest. So, well, we know we could have a little treasure chest to spend every summer. It remains to be seen, but I mean, yes, spend the whole transfer budget on Isak if need be, and then see what else is left. I don't want to see no 50 million for Hato and 50 million for Diamande And then that Ornstein tweet on August 29th, where he's talking about the club would like a right winger, but only if we can shift one up. Now, I don't want to see that. Man. I need
the club are not willing to go the extra 10 million to bring it. Oh.
I'm throwing my phone out the window. No, absolutely not. Nah, man. Like, Saka's right Achilles, yeah, it's screaming for help. We're going to get you some help, bro.
No, facts. Facts. All right, Khalil, let's leave it there. Listeners, thank you for all your questions. We'll be back again with another post-match after, hopefully, you know, another W at Old Trafford. I'll say another, but because, you know, we can only think of the one of the last 20 attempts or whatever it was. But
listen, yeah, I saw Andre Santos swap shirts at halftime with my own two eyes. I was there at that game, so I'm due a pasting. I need to see the stadium evacuated by halftime. Yeah, but anyway, sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Yeah, no, you are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And hopefully they can do it. I'll take any victory at this point. Just get over the line, beat this fucking team, and go take this title charge down to the last game, man. And I need Man City to be pushed all the way, and I'm confident we're going to do it. But Khalil, thanks for your time, man. It's good to speak to you. Listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back on Sunday with a post-match reaction to the United game. Take it easy.
Yeah, peace.
It's got to 2-2, and we've still got more than half an hour to go, and here's Ozil. Lacazette, Ozil!
Yo! Man could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man had to drop that mind. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys could
do that. It's amazing. It's Aaron Ramsey.
Sports Social Podcast Network.